Namaskar, this is Dr. Veda Pragyananda, and welcome to DharmaCast. Today we're going to have a special episode, and it is a recording from a lecture which I gave at Valparaiso University in Indiana on February 25th, 2017. And so I was invited to give a lecture to the university students there, and I spoke on the topic Unlocking Your Full Potential with Yoga and Meditation. So I hope you enjoy listening to it. I wanted to explain how yoga is a path which could help you to unlock your full potential. So most people, if I ask most people what they thought yoga is, they think it's, well, you know, you're going to go into a pretzel like that, you know, in different postures. That's part of it. It's just a small part of it. It's important. It's an important part. Not that you can make, you know, amazing gymnastics. No, the reason why it's important is because this goal of reaching your potential, of unlocking your full self, cannot be done in 20 minutes or a half year or 2 years or 3 years. It's your whole life. So you have to do whatever you can to preserve your physical body so that we'll be in good shape. So it's, of course, we're on a marathon. So to make this marathon, you have to, one of the parts, and that's why it's an integral part of yoga, it's called the yoga asanas, yoga postures, and it's coupled with diet and fasting and different other rules of hygiene and good living. So it's an important part, but it's just the beginning. Because, so now, okay, you have your body and everything, but what are you going to do with it? So this is what I came really to talk about, is to unlock the full potential. So we don't realize actually what we're capable of doing. So, you know, in psychology they say someone is an underachiever. We're all underachievers. We can do much more. But we have to find the way how to do that. Now, why don't we find the way? Many thousands of years ago, the yogis made a nice analogy. So like in those days, you know, they didn't have cars and planes, but they had chariots. So they said that the human being is like a chariot. We're a chariot, right? Yes. They said, the senses, we have senses, right? I want to eat, I want to do something like that. They're the horses. And the mind are the reins of the horses. And the intellect, which decides what to do, to go this way, to go that way, is the driver. That's the mind. So what's happening to most people? The horses are out of control. We don't always do what the mind says to do. So the mind, so you can go to a doctor and the doctor says, don't do this, don't smoke, or don't eat this, don't. Okay, you know that. But then when you get in front of that object, which you're supposed to avoid, you go right to it. It's the horse. It's out of control. The horses are out of control. So that's one of the first obstacles why we don't realize our full potential. Because we don't listen to that discriminating intellect which says, don't do this, better do this. We can't do it because we're not capable. The horses are out of control. So the only way to get the horses in control is we have to make the mind stronger. The reins of the mind have to become. And then, when your mind is stronger, then you can direct the chariot. You can go in the right, and you won't crash. Because if you don't direct it, you're going to crash. So this is one of the first reasons why people do not reach their full potential. So what does yoga have to say about this? So yoga actually gives a path to rein in the mind. And then also, once we rein in, where are we going to go? We have to have a good direction too. Yoga also gives that direction. So to rein in the mind, this is called, in psychology, it's called the conscious mind. We have a conscious mind, and all of our desires, we have a desire. We see ice cream cone, and then we say, yeah, I'm going to eat it. And then your hand goes out and gets it. All of that is the work of the conscious mind. So we have to be aware of our conscious mind, and we also have to know how to manage it and control it. So there's a part of yoga, and maybe I hope you will learn that when you come to the classes, that it shows you how to do that, and you will learn how to do that. But the conscious mind is not the end. So there's something called the subconscious mind. So in most Western psychology, that's talked about, it's the realm where the dreams are. You know, you had this dream, you had that dream. And sometimes some people analyze the dreams, but that's another subject. So that's there. But there's more. Even the yogi said there's even other parts of the mind. And those parts of the mind are the places where intuition and creativity come. So imagine if we could unlock those. Many of the great discoveries have come from intuition, from dreams. The periodic table of the elements, somebody was dreaming and he wrote them down. It came in a dream, many things, prophecies come in a dream. So can you imagine if we could tap that place? What would that do? But yogis give some practices, actually, some meditation practices to go into that realm. And also think about creativity. So creativity is not something that you can just do. You know, go in that room and compose a song. Can you do it? Make a poem. Poetry on demand. I once wrote a poem called Poetry on Demand because I was forced to do it. It was an exercise. But you can't do things like that just in the rational way. So creativity also comes from a deep place of the mind. And why don't we see that deep place, that creative place, that place where all the great ideas are? Why don't we? So just like I said before, the chariot is going like that. So even if you get the senses in, your mind is racing. Your mind is racing. So maybe the horses are quiet, but the mind is racing. One yogi said that the mind is like a mad monkey stung by a scorpion. So what it means is that, let's say you want to concentrate. Because to do great things, you have to concentrate. You want to concentrate. I'm going to concentrate. So I used to be a student like you were here. So I would go to the library. I'm going to spend 3 hours in the library. I'm going to study. So what would happen? After 15 minutes, then I'm out at the Coke machine. You know, and then I come back. You know. So to really keep on it, you know, that's not so easy. So we have to strengthen the mind. So how are we going to strengthen the mind? So you know, if you want to strengthen the body, there are exercises for that. You can get barbells. And this is this muscle. I used to do that, actually. Maybe I don't look like it, but I used to be a wrestler. And I used to be able to press my weight. No. But anyway, I don't do that kind of stuff anymore. But I know how it works, though. So how does it work? So you have the barbell, or the dumbbell, and you're going like this. So what it's doing, it's actually tearing the muscle. Yeah, that's actually what it does. And then you give it a rest, the muscle builds. And when the muscle builds, it gets stronger, and then you can do that, and then you can lift more. So by doing that exercise, it gets stronger. And that's just a physical muscle. But now I'm talking about a mental muscle. So the mental muscle is like this. I say, concentrate on this. Even your teacher will say, yeah, read this thing. You have to read it. To read something, you have to really concentrate. You can't just walk out to the Coke machine every 2 minutes. You have to focus. But you can't do it. So that's what the mental exercise, we call it meditation, is. And in meditation, what we do is we give something, we say, okay, we give a sound or a song, that's my phone. and we say, concentrate on it. Just only that. We don't say make nothing. That's impossible. To close your eyes and do nothing, that's impossible. But you could do one thing. Think about one thing. So then we say, think about one thing. Okay, so then you're doing it. One thing, one thing, one thing. Okay, but it won't be like that. But you're trying to do it. But then your mind will wander again. Oh, yeah, after meditation, I'm going to do this. I'm going to eat this. I'm going to do that. One time I was with one friend. He came to visit me. I had a yoga center in Los Angeles, and he came from San Francisco. And so then we had a morning meditation. So we were meditating. So after the meditation, I said, oh, how was your meditation? He said, I was thinking about the oatmeal. Because that was the next program with oatmeal. So, but it goes like this. Suppose you have one thing you're going to try to meditate on, and then you do it for 10 seconds, your mind wanders, and you bring it back. Okay, good. And then you do it again, and you bring it back. Every time you bring it back, it's like the barbell. Your muscle is getting exercised. And if you do that long enough, you know, you really try, you do it on a daily basis, just like the weightlifter, the day is going to come when you are going to sit down and you're going to make your mind still. It'll be focused on one thing. And when you're focused on one thing, many things happen. Many things happen. See, the problem, why we don't reach the creative and the greater portion of our mind is, it's something like, you know, the stars are out now. It's, you know, it's like 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock. They're out. You don't see any stars, do you? No. You don't see it. There are many factors, but usually the biggest factor is the sun is out. The sun is out, you don't see it. And the same with the why we don't see the higher realm or the deeper realms of the mind is because the conscious mind is like the sun. It's just chattering, it's this and that, you know, it's blocking the path. So in the unfoldment of the mind, when you learn how to concentrate it and make it still and the mind quiets, then the creative part comes, and then you will get some inspiration to do something. So this is the mental side. So I said there's a physical side. You have to keep your body in shape. And that's what we're going to teach you here. You know, after the spring break, there'll be classes every day. And the yoga postures, actually, they're misunderstood. They're not aerobics. You're not going to get aerobic. Like I do walking every day. I get my aerobic activity, you know. But the yoga postures, what they do is that they put pressure on the different organs and glands, and they can help you to prevent disease or even sometimes cure disease. They're very special exercises which help get the body attuned. And not, there's one thing which people don't know, most 99% of the people don't know this, is that yoga postures are not one size fits all. Everybody has to do the same ones. No. First of all, you can't do it. Like, you know, what, you know, 80-year-old man can't do what a 16-year-old boy can do. That's one factor. But another factor is the need. You should do the postures which you need to do for your particular body. It's like a prescription. Like my teacher taught me. He looked at me. And then he looked me up and down. Okay, do this. And I've been doing that for the last, you know, 40 years or so. Because those postures, he knew my strengths and my weaknesses. Everybody has their strength and their weakness. And so you have to identify what are the kind of the weak parts of your physical structure. And then you get postures that help that. So that's what yoga postures are. And then the meditation is the exercise for the mind. So if you go like that, with good postures and also proper diet, that's a whole subject in itself. I would go into, well, you can ask questions about that later if you want. If I went into that, then, but that's it's a big part of life. You are what you eat, some people once said. So you have to think about that. If you want a good end result, you have to put in something good into your body. So good physical base, and then learn how to quiet your mind. But now, once the mind is quiet, what should we direct it to? Now, this is the big question. It's actually the question about our purpose in life. Our purpose in life. Why are we here? Are we here? I know you're here to be good students because you came here, and then if you get to become a good student, and then you get some good grade, and then you'll get some good job, right? That's good. But maybe there's more than that. So we have to think about that. And so the meditation actually goes into what I would call a spiritual direction. And the spiritual direction is that we have to realize that we are more than a sack of skin and bones. That's a big... See, we think, oh, this is me, that's me, this is me, that's me. But that's not you. You could, God forbid, you could lose one part. You're still there. You're still there. You still can be there. So what we are attached to, or what we identify with, is not our full self. So the secret then is to find out the real self. This is the real self. We have to find that. So what do I mean by the real self? So you have an ego, and you have an identity, right? It's in your pocket here. It says that. I can look at anybody's pocket. I can find out the name, an address, everything. But that's not you. That is not you. You could also lose that. Also, it's a hassle, but it's not the end of the world. So what is the real you? So here's an interesting experiment. I think everyone here can say, I exist, right? You can say it. And so what is that? It's our mind. Our mind. You say, I exist. And we exist here. So we exist in this thing. And we have an eventful existence we have. If someone praises you, oh, you're beautiful, and you go way up. Someone says, you're an idiot. You go down. And so we're going up, we're going down. It's like a punching bag, right? We're getting punched. Sometimes we're getting caressed, we're also getting punched. It goes like that. Wouldn't you like to escape that? So the yogis said, they go further. They said, that's the I exist, you I. But there's another statement you can make. I know I exist. I know I exist. What's that? So I exist is there, but now you're saying, I know I, it's something beyond the mind. It's the witness of the mind. It's called the soul, the Atman. It's the witness. Now that witness is not affected. If someone praises you, it doesn't go up. And if someone defames you, it doesn't go down. It's impassionate. It's witnessing. And that is the source of peace. You have to get off this punching bag state and retract your mind and go back and exist in that pure you. And that pure you is not any nationality, not any skin color, not any religion, not any language. And what is it? It's love. It really is. That's what all the religions have taught, that the essence is the soul or God is love. But we don't feel that, we don't think that, because we're in our conscious mind and we're going up from the little praise and we're going down from the blame and we're just going on like this. So you have to stop that normal activity and quiet your mind. And go deep inside, and then quiet the chattering of that conscious mind, and go to that subconscious mind, and then go back to that place where the witness is. And this is the real yoga. Because I wrote a song about it. So what my teacher once said was that you are never alone or helpless. The force that guides the stars guides you too. So you know that the cosmos is, you can't describe it. It's so amazing, you know, so many stars and planets and galaxies and nebula. So can you imagine that same, whatever's guiding that is also inside of you. So that is the central teaching of yoga. I tell that to people all the time. It's not to become a pretzel. But if you can realize, yes, there's something infinite guiding me, your life will be complete. You will overcome any kind of challenge. So suppose there are 100 people out to get you. 100 against 1. No. 100 against 1 plus 1. And that plus 1 is like the whole, you know, the cosmic force. It's God. It's the spiritual entity. You'll become great in that sense of the term. So that's really, you know, that's the essence. I want us to talk about one more thing. If, my teacher once said this, if somebody, let's say your age, comes into contact with this kind of teaching and practice, and does it, their life will surely be successful. Surely. It will be successful. Whatever you want to accomplish, you will do it. So it's very important. I once had a friend. I still have a friend. He's like a millennial, kind of a little bit older than you guys. He lives in Sweden, American, a music teacher. He's a great musician. But he was wavering about whether he should do the meditation. I said, look, do you want to be successful in your music and everything? And he said, yes, okay, then do your meditation. I mean, I know that he already has done wonderful things. He's going to do stupendous things. Because you couple that with your normal vocation, and you can do wonderful things. You can overcome all obstacles. But I want to say one more thing. You know, we come here in a university. We're hoping to become smart. Right? But that's not the purpose. The smart people, they devise atom bomb and like that. So we have to become not just smart, we have to become wise. That is important. So that's not taught. Maybe it's taught because that's what philosophy is supposed to do. Yeah. How to become wise. So this is one of the fruits of yoga practice. You become wise. And what does wise mean? What is wisdom? Wisdom is the ability to discern what is lasting and what is transitory. So many people put their eggs in one basket. It's transitory. I'm going to get so much money. You know, it can evaporate. You know, the stock market will go down, you're finished. So you should find out what is permanent and what is transitory. So this is one thing. Then there's another thing which also has to be developed if you want to be truly successful, and that is compassion. Compassion. So, yeah, that's a tough lesson. Yeah, when I was growing up, I was not so compassionate. In fact, you know, they used to have these standardized tests. So in the standardized tests, it was actually a test to describe your future occupation. But they would ask certain questions. Would you like to take care of a sick person? Would you like to, you know, they asked some questions kind of sort of towards the altruistic side. And so then I went out of the test with one of my friends. Yes, I didn't answer any of those. You know, I didn't check any of those. Yeah, that was me. But when you, as you go on this kind of path, that's what it should do. It should, your compassion should arise, awaken. Because what you're going to find out is that the real you is connected with all the other living and even non-living entities. We're all in a, it's a connected thing. We don't see the connection now because we just see shapes and forms. But when you go deeper within your mind, you'll understand there's a oneness. And so when you get that feeling, then you become more compassionate. And that's one of the traits. How you know someone's really a good yogi? Now, you know, you've got a yoga mat and sits, you know. No, but when their compassion and their service mentality wakens, we say, that's good. So we have to become wise. We have to become compassionate. And I'm going to add one more thing. So if you just remember this, it's good. Become wise. Become compassionate. And then, last point that I was thinking about, we should become content. Content. Contentment is so important. So you can go do a poll, you know, become a sociologist, and then you take a poll of the very, very rich people who have big bank accounts and lots of. Then you can ask them, well, are you happy? Are you content? And no, I want more. I live in a gated community. Someone's going to come and take it. You know, so there's not peace. You might go to a beggar. Once I was on one bus in Nepal. It was the bus ride from hell, I can say, at least for someone like me. Crammed with people. I was going on a road that looks like I could just slip over, and some buses do, you know. And so many people, there was no room. And then these Nepali people sitting in the back, just smiling. It's a contentment. So you have to learn to be content with what you get. Of course, we want to have a better standard than what they have there, but you should work hard for to get what you can, and then be content with that. And that's more. So you might, the person who's content has more than the person who is, he might have absolutely more than you, but it's not a question of absolute wealth. It's the relative contentment that you get from it. That's it. There could be a beggar who just works on the street, but he does his work. Some people think beggars are lazy. No, they're not lazy. They have to get up and they have to work. No, and suppose there's one beggar and he does that and he goes home and he's happy with what he gets. He's content. But there could be a businessman passing by and he goes home. What does he do? He takes out his computer and he's working. He's a workaholic, like, not happy, not content. So who is the rich one? Who is the poor one? You decide. So you should learn how to become content. So yoga does all of these things. It does. It does these things. Because as you practice, see, one of the ethical parts of yoga, it's called aparigraha. It means not to take too much. You know, someone once said there's enough, the world has enough for the need of every man, but not enough for the greed. You know, if a lot of people take too much, then some people can be deprived, you know. So the yogis say, just take what you need. Take what you need. Don't take more. Like, one house is okay. There's some people, there was once a presidential candidate, he couldn't remember how many houses he had. Don't be like that. Just take one house, you know. One. But just live with what you need. And if you do that, that will give you, it's contentment is tied to that. So people who violate this thing of not taking too much, they never become content. So become content, become wise, become compassionate, and then definitely you'll be successful. That's what success is. It's not achieved by just professional standing or economic standing. So that's what I wanted to say. I have one more thing, though. One more thing, very important. It's very important. You see, we live in a transitional phase. Nothing is stable. Even the climate. You see how, you know, I don't want to get into an argument of why it is, but no one can argue that we didn't have much winter here. So there's changes are going on. Physical changes. There's social changes. There are many changes that are going on. So what you have here today, you know, in 20 years you look back and you say, wow, what a change. Even for my youth, there's tremendous change. I grew up in the time of the Cold War and it was quite a stressful, but it ended, you know. It ended, it changed. So things are going to change. And you people, you have to be what makes it change. Someone says you're part of the problem, part of the solution, be part of the solution. So you have to do something. Young people have to do something to build a proper society. See, we don't have a proper society today because there's so much threats. You know, we have so many problems, whether it be economic problems, social problems, political problems. And still, even though the Cold War ended, I'm sorry to say that the same weapons, they got just different kind of enemies, but the same weapons they had a hair trigger. Someone, one time it happened that there were some birds flew up by the the radar, and the Russians thought, oh, the West is attacking, we're going to do that. It was in 1980 or something or like that. And then even after the end of the Cold War, the same thing. Even a one wrong decision, the whole thing can blow up. You're not so much aware of it. Back then, during the Cold War, we were really aware of it, even though the threat is actually more now than it was then. So this is not sustainable. We have to have a sustainable world. So a sustainable world is where wealth is abundant, not for a few, but for many. And when those disparities end, then the strife will end. So that's a big task. And that will be sustainable, because what we have now is not sustainable. You know, work income, also we are on economic... If you study economics, anyone study macroeconomics, you know there's something called the business cycle. So the business cycle, it goes up and then it goes down. You know, there's so many stuff, so many things have been created, but there's nobody who can buy them anymore. Poof, it goes down. So the business cycle is there. So there's so many unsustainable parts of our life that we have to address. And only the young people can really address the problems, because as we get older, then people are stuck in their ways, you know. So you're just forming your ways. So you should study. That's one of the things you can study. You know about the studying. Most of the things you study, you're going to forget when you walk out of the door. You know, after you take your exam, and then 2 weeks later, if someone gives you the exam again, you're gonna be in trouble. But that's not the facts, you know, the individual, and that's not important. But you should learn how to think. That's why you're here in college. You should learn how to think properly and then build up your mind and build up your character. But you should go out in the world and do something great. Yeah, do something great. That's my teacher say. He said, do something great for humanity. Do something noble. And I'll finish with one more thing. There was a poet in India around 500 years ago. His name is Tulsidas. So he wrote a poem. So the poem goes like this. Now, in that part of India, the poet always puts his name into the poem. So he said, O Tulsi, when you came into the world, everybody was laughing, but you were crying. So you know how a baby might be crying. Everybody is smiling. Then the poem continues. He said, you should live your life in such a way, that with such satisfaction, that when you leave the world, you will be smiling and the others will be crying. Yeah. So that's what you should do. But that's what it means to be full potential, to live such a life where you're an asset to the society. And when you leave, everybody has to leave, right? There's no way out. We're all going to leave one day. Just, you know, face it. But when you leave, you should have satisfaction to know that you did the best you could. And then the others will be sorry to see such a good person leave. Yeah. So that's all I wanted to say. So, thank you. So now we have time for some questions.
Does yoga, can you talk about yoga and chakras?
And what?
Can you talk about yoga and chakras?
Chakras. So here are chakras. This is a book that I wrote. So chakras are centers of energy and the centers of the glands. In fact, this is how the yoga postures work. So there are seven fundamental chakras, although there are two extras. And they're located at the base of the, at the spine, the base of the spine, and then there's one another a little bit above that, the second one. There's one on the level of the navel, third. There's one over here, there's one over here, there's one over here, and there's one at the crown of the head. And these chakras, they control different glands and instincts. The yogis call them vrittis. So the chakras control the vrittis. So that is why if you do the proper asanas, you can put pressure on the chakras and you can get control over the vrittis. This is one aspect of it. So, and over here, there's fear is here, and shame is here, fear is here, and shame is here. Different kind of things. So that's why my guru once said, look, suppose there's someone who's afraid of public speaking, then do the peacock asana, because it's going to put pressure on this chakra. So chakras are like that. Also, this is just another part of yoga, but as you go get more advancement and you go higher and higher, then you get different states. Like I said, you're going to realize that self, the true self. So there are different realizations of that true self. You get, oh, I feel, yeah, I'm feeling a little bit blissful. I'm feeling that I'm in the same room. Imagine let's say you have a lover. I'm in the same room as my lover. So you get happy, okay, she's here. But then I feel closer and I feel better. So as you go up the higher chakras, you feel better and better. So it's like that. So it's a big subject. I can't, I have a book here. It has a pretty good explanation of it. There are sounds also that emanate from the chakras.
Does body alignment have an effect on chakras?
Well, body alignment is more like in the realm of physiotherapy. No, body alignment. So, but it is good, like when you meditate and try to keep your back straight. You know, but as you keep it straight, then it helps the process. So, but body alignment or alignment itself doesn't work on the chakras, because the chakras are not strictly physical objects. They're psycho-spiritual objects. So the yogic practices of concentration and meditation are what you need. And plus the asanas also. But there's some asanas actually work on the glands controlled by the chakras. But the chakras itself are influenced by the meditative practice and not the physical practice. It's an advanced question. Yeah.
Would you explain the difference of between a meditating mind and a non-meditating mind?
Okay. Okay, in a meditating mind, you know, there's one thing that's very important. You're aware. Like you've heard the term mindfulness, you're mindful. You're aware of what you're doing. So here's a meditating mind. And later, after I'm going to, we'll get to, I'll do a practice session. We're going to practice a little meditation. You can see what it is. I'll do it. I'll sing a song and you try to meditate. We'll do that. But what happens is, when you're meditating, you're kind of aware of what you're doing. Yeah, I should be meditating. Even if you're not meditating very well, he told me to concentrate on this and I'm doing this, but you're still aware. Yeah, I'm not doing that. So that's the meditative mind, that you become mindful of what you're doing. You become aware of what you're doing. I think that's one of the biggest differences of a mind which is meditating and not. There's one philosopher said, everybody in the world is sleeping. You're walking around. You're not sleeping, right? But in a way, sometimes we're like in a daze. We're walking around as automatically. You don't even see your friend come by. Because you're not mindful of, oh, yeah, I'm here, and this is what I'm supposed to be doing. So when you're meditating, you can even do some meditation in action, and when you become aware, that's a meditative mind for me.
Do you think that would help with people getting Alzheimer's?
This is something we have to study. It has to be, it has to be studied. But definitely they've found that physical stimulation, certain kinds of mental stimulation helps people, but it's something we have to study. I have a friend in California. He has a grant now. He's studying EEG, electroencephalograph, with meditators. So it requires study. I feel that meditation will raise the intelligence. Maybe, I don't know how you have to measure intelligence of people, or also different kind of things could be studied, but it has to be studied,
Can you compare and contrast meditation with the conventional conception of prayer?
Okay, that's a good question. Yeah, that's a good question. They're very much, they have something in common. So what happens in prayer? You should be in a quiet place, right? And then you should, and then you're thinking about God. Someone once said the difference of prayer and meditation is that in prayer, you're talking to God, right? You're saying, oh, please, no. And in meditation, you're listening. So, not exactly. It's not exactly like that. But the difference here, in the meditation which I teach, we're not asking for anything. We're not even praising. It's useless to praise God anyway. We're not praising. But what we're doing is we're trying to connect. So in that way it's the same, because you go into a prayer, you're trying to connect with God in a certain way, right? So here in meditation, you're also trying to connect. But the means of connection is not to ask anything. The means of connection is to detach the mind from its disturbances and to concentrate and to find your inner peace, and to connect. That's definitely, meditation is definitely in its spiritual sense. People don't want to say it, but I'll say it. In its deepest sense, it's something spiritual. You're going to connect with the greatness, whatever you want to call that greatness. I don't use the word God in the thing, because then everyone has a different conception of what it is. I don't want to get involved. But you will find out. You're going to see, the idea here is to experience. It's not to do it because, I'm required to attend this church or that place or that place. No, I want to experience. So this is the difference. Here is, we want experience thing. So what I would say is that some forms of prayer are very meditative. Others are less. It can be mechanical. So it depends.
Your diet choices for leading a compassionate and
balanced. Okay, this is an interesting question, but I'm a vegetarian because, first of all, I found that I can grow, I don't need meat. So, do we eat out of need or out of greed? You have to ask yourself. We should eat what we need. And also another thing, you know, we're talking about greenhouse gases. The biggest cause of greenhouse gases is animal husbandry, not fossil fuels. We can make, if you want to, if you become a vegetarian, you can make a huge contribution. So most yogis, not all, but most yogis are vegetarians. Yeah. Yeah. And then there's some other diet choices, you know, that are there. But I don't want to go into a whole thing. She will teach it in the yoga classes, right? So that's what I want to see. Now you listened here. We've been here for about an hour. Listening doesn't do. It's good because it could inspire you one day. But you should practice. You got to practice. We say yoga works if you work. So you have to do a little bit of work. How much work? Learn some yoga postures. Do it 20 minutes every day. Then learn some meditation. Do that a little bit. I have one friend. I taught him meditation about a year ago. He says he's struggling. So I say, okay, here, I give a simple process. When you get up in the morning, you sit in the bed, and you repeat your mantra 15 times. Before you go to sleep, do it again 15 times. Actually, I want him to do more. Then I said, I wrote him a big explanation when I taught him, keep that nearby. And then once a week, try that, do the full process, and then expand. So you have to start with a little, but you have to do a little bit every day, and then expand. So that's what we're trying to do here. She's going to teach the classes. You come, you're going to learn the postures, many things. You'll learn first steps on this path to something really wonderful.
You mentioned abstinence.
What?
You mentioned abstinence, like, for food, I would think, right?
What?
Fasting, I'm
fasting. Fasting.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm fasting.
Fasting.
So, can you?
Okay, I'll tell you.
So, how often and
good idea. Good question. Yeah, fasting is one of the secrets of long life and very healthy life. You want to have shining skin? Do fasting. So how do you do that? Fasting 2 times a month. It's calibrated with the moon, at least yoga fasting is. 11 days after the full moon, 11 days after the new moon, you fast. Don't eat anything. From the morning to the next morning. That's how it goes. The yoga day is from morning to the next morning. Why are you saying, I can't do it? You can do it. It's possible. How to do it? You have to have a physical preparation. The day before, you should drink enough liquids and get enough food. You shouldn't be, so you won't be hungry the next day. And then you do a mental preparation. Say, tomorrow, I'm fasting. Without that, you can't do it. I'll explain why. So then the morning comes. And then you know that it's your fasting day. For me, what happens is even my appetite shuts off. And then I finish the fasting day. And then when the next morning comes, now here comes a secret. Not many people know this. You break your fast nicely. So the preparation is important. You have to have physical preparation, mental preparation. And then the ending is important. So how does it end it? You take a lot of water and you squeeze some lemons. And you put salt in it too. And you drink that. The salt actually acts as it flushes out the toxins. And that's how come you get the beautiful skin and beautiful health, because when the toxins go out. And I know it's kind of squeamish stuff, you know, but anyway. But it's a great thing. If you do this, it prevents many diseases and it'll extend your life. So this is fasting. Now, I said, if you don't do the mental preparation, what's going to happen? The morning's going to come. Then you're going to say, should I have breakfast or should I not have breakfast? You'll think of a million reasons why you should have breakfast, I guarantee you. But if the day before you said, today's my fast day, then you wake up and say, this is my fasting day. And then you make it. But if you're not sure, you'll think of many reasons why you shouldn't fast. So make a mental determination, physical preparation, do the fast. And when you do the fast, pick it on a day. I said 11 days, but you can move it one day here or there. And do it on a day when you don't have so much challenging physical activity. And then do the fasting. And when you do the fasting, then you don't have to clean and cook and do shopping. And you use that time, study. I have books here, and at the end you can come up and study your books and do some meditation, be quiet. See, when you're doing fasting, you shouldn't be thinking about all the food you're going to eat tomorrow. That's not the idea. To do fasting means to make the mind calm and use it for elevating stuff. Yeah.
And would you drink that day or water?
If you're just starting out, you can drink water, but I do dry fast. If you're in good health, if you're in decent health, but if you have some kind of kidney problem or this, you know that. But you can start off with a liquid fast and then later go to a dry fast. You have to check it out. But it's a formidable practice. It's one of the secrets of the yogis, and it's a wonderful thing. Wonderful thing. Okay.